Good morning. It's 8:19. When we come back, we'll be talking horsies with Horsey Chuck.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Chuck Thomas, horse dude. Right?
Hello, Brian.
Oh, you're a horse guy. Okay.
Yeah, horse guy, sure.
Okay. What is the biggest fallacy that the non-horse racing public or non-horse racing sporting public has about horse racing?
Well, let's see. Horses are so fragile. I don't think people think about that a lot. They see the horses racing, but they really don't realize just how much work goes into getting any one horse on the track. They require a tremendous amount of care, and, of course, that means it's very expensive to maintain a horse. And I would say over 90% of all horses lose money for their owners because of that.
So let's do something we're maybe a little bit more familiar with. Pick another sport. You want baseball, you want football, you want basketball?
Yeah, baseball would be good.
Okay, so what would the analogy be in baseball to the horse racing? Would it be the All-Stars would be the ones that we hear about, and everybody else would pretty much be break-even at best?
Well, one analogy might be that in baseball, you know, there's all these different levels of baseball as you work your way up from, you know, first in high school and college, American Legion, single-A ball, rookie ball, double-A ball. I mean, a lot of players go through the process, and only a very few make it to the big leagues. And it would be the same thing with horses. Of all the horses that are, think of all the horses that are bred and raised and trained, and maybe one out of 20, you know, makes it to a race, and then one out of maybe 1,000 makes it to a big race like the Kentucky Derby. It would be even a lot more than that. It'd probably be 20,000 or so. So it's very difficult to get to the big races.
So more of a Hall of Fame kind of a concept. I mean, winnowing it down that far. The horses that do make it, but don't make it big, other than being cannon fodder for the races, you know, somebody has to finish fifth in a 6-horse race or an 8-horse race. What do they do? Are they just horses? They turn into household pets or out on the farm, and do they become working stock? Because aren't they bred for specific traits?
Well, there are many agencies and nonprofits that have been created in the last 20 or 30 years to take care of retired racehorses. And there are many, many of these businesses out there, and they do a great job. And without them, unfortunately, most horses at the end of their career had a kind of a sad demise. And it is true, you know, horses used to end up in, you know, a glue factory or something like that. But nowadays, it's not quite like that. They try to place all the horses and find homes for them.
With the big boys and girls, we'll hear about the breeding opportunities and so-and-so sired or that kind of stuff. What percentage of those make it big? I mean, with the money that's being spent, it would seem like you're narrowing the funnel.
Yeah, it is. It is very narrow. And to say what it is, I really don't know. But it is so infinitesimal compared to how many horses there are. And of course, right now we have the greatest example of a stallion that's come along maybe ever, and that's the horse American Pharoah. And it's estimated that, well, first of all, American Pharoah just won the Triple Crown. That's the first time that's been done since 1978, and the Triple Crown is regarded as the toughest series of races in all of horse racing. Anyway, American Pharoah just won the Triple Crown, and it's estimated that his stud fees are going to generate about $200 million a year. Now, that's the ultimate. That's what everybody strives for. Very rare, though.
Yeah, I would think that there's... So with that and however many offspring, is there a hope that there'll be one out of thousands? I mean, what are the odds for that horse's offspring to be able to have any of the characteristics to be able to go even to a regional, let alone national spotlight?
Well, they figured out breeding to some extent. And, there's a saying, breed the best of the best and hope for the best. And that's been around a long time. But if you were lucky enough or you could afford to breed to American Pharoah, chances are pretty good you're going to get a pretty good horse. So if you can afford the $200,000 stud fee, then give it a go. You know, it's not a bad way to go. Although there are lots of horses that have very, mediocre racing records or mediocre pedigrees, and they turn out to be great sires. So you never really know what's going to happen. But American Pharoah should do pretty well.
With dogs, cats, flowers, the biology is there pretty tight, and you can breed certain characteristics. Same with the horses, or is there still that magic that really is uncontrollable?
Well, there's definitely a magic. The basic rule in horse racing is you're trying to create hybrids. You don't want to breed breeding lines to each other. It's the same line. Kind of like what happened to the royal family of England. You don't want that to happen with your horses. So they usually don't breed horses that have similar pedigrees.
Just to keep it fresh, so to
speak,
and to avoid some of the problems.
And that's called hybrid vigor, actually, is the term they use. And that's what you strive for. Although occasionally they'll do some what they call line breeding or inbreeding and really produce some tremendous horses. But it's very dangerous. Most of the horses that come out of that kind of breeding don't turn out
to be racing horses?
To be good race horses.
Or turn out to be horses?
Well, they turn out, they're horses, and you can't tell them apart from any other horse. But they're just not fast. The whole idea is to breed a fast horse.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Chuck Thomas. Chuck, the concept of horses and the ability to take a horse, quality horse, and turn it into a champion, is that the trainer? Is that the facilities? Because there's got to be something more than just genetic stock. I mean, they talk about that with professional athletes and in other disciplines, that there has to be that passion. Well, how do you breed passion? That's part of that intangible.
Yeah, it's very difficult and a lot of luck involved. The idea is that somehow you luck out and get a great horse like American Pharoah. That was mostly luck. In fact, that owner tried to sell American Pharoah, and couldn't sell them and ended up having to keep them and turn it into like a practically a $1 billion empire now. So there is a lot of luck involved. But once you get a horse on the track and you have a trainer, you have to really take care of him because so many little things can go wrong that'll derail their career. So if you take care of them and you have good breeding and you have a horse that's naturally fast, maybe you'll have a chance to make some serious money and go on to the big races.
Is that why the sportsmen that are involved are involved? Is it a money-making enterprise or is it athletics?
Well, mostly I think it's the prestige of winning these races, and people are willing to spend a lot of money, way more money than they'll ever earn back, you know, for a chance at a Kentucky Derby or a Breeders' Cup or something like that. So it's a sport. They call it the sport of kings, and we don't have kings around here anymore, but we do have a lot of rich people. And by rich, I don't mean like a millionaire. I mean close to billionaires. They're the kind of people that really get into this sport big time. They go to the horse sales, and it's easily horses, their babies, will sell for $1 million. It's not that common, but it does happen. And most horses, most good horses, will sell anywhere from $1,000 to $500,000 at a sale. Well, just the fact they're that expensive tells you the owners are probably never going to make that money back.
Well, and you throw in the cost of the trailer. Now you're talking big money, huh?
Well, if you want to fly your horse from the East Coast to the West Coast, I think it's $3,000 to $4,000. So,
is that how they do it?
If it's a good enough horse, they'll fly him.
They'll fly.
If it's a marginal horse, they'll put him on a van.
Yeah, and if it's really a poor one, he's pulling the van.
Yeah. And if he's really poor, they won't bother at all.
Yeah.
But
So what about the jockeys? I think everybody can appreciate that the trainer and the training staff and the medical staff have influence. Okay. What about the jockey, him or herself? Do they bring much to the table, or is it one of those situations where the good ones don't screw it up, but the bad ones do?
Well, first the trainer. The horse spends about 99.9% of his time with the trainer, so the trainer has a gigantic influence on how the horse does. But the jockey may be even more important because some jockeys are just so great and they understand pace and timing and how to make a move and how to relax a horse and have like a clock on their head. They know how fast they're going. And a jockey like that is very important when you're in a race. And some jockeys are just so much better than other jockeys. So to me, I'd rather have like an average trainer and a great jockey in a big race. So. And they're such great athletes, too. People don't realize just how athletic they are, and they're just so strong and smart, and they're fit, and they're fearless. It's really a great accomplishment to be a jockey.
I would figure that a lot of folks just look at their height and go, eh. I mean, they're in the weight room like the golfers are now.
Yeah.
Didn't used to be that way, obviously. What does the individual's strength do, or the fitness level? Is it the fatigue is there aboard, or is it the ability to control the horse a little bit more?
Yeah, it's to control the horse. You get behind a highly tuned 1,000-pound animal running as hard as you can. They're very difficult to control, so the jockeys have to be extremely smart, strong.
You'll see some using the whip. Regularly, you see others who don't use it at all. Is that just personal preference?
Well, actually, you have to use the whip. That's the rule, which is kind of a bad rule, but they're modifying it. In other words, like you just said, that don't use the whip. Well, if someone did not use the whip, they might get in trouble for doing that. But they have modified the rules where you can only hit him a few times in the stretch. And that's really a good idea because it's not been proven that hitting a horse with a whip makes him really go any faster. So I like Santa Anita, which is kind of a real progressive track. They have rules now about limiting the use of the whip. So it's good for the sport.
The whip itself, is it painful?
Oh, yeah.
For the horse?
Yeah, it hurts.
Okay, so it gets their attention.
Yeah, it sure does, and there's different ways to do it. And jockeys, unfortunately, know where the tender spots are on the horse if they want to really, wake them up. But the racing officials and tracks are catching on to that, and they're limiting the use of the whip. So that's an improvement in the sport.
When the horses are together in a cluster or whatever it's, I'm sure there's a technical phrase for it. They break out of the gate and everybody's all, you know, can touch each other, so to speak. I mean, yeah. that tight. Is that where a lot of the races are lost?
Oh, definitely. Especially in the sprints, the shorter races, like half a mile, three quarters of a mile, the start is very important. In the big races where they go a mile, mile and a 16th, longer distances, the start is not so important. What you want, though, is to not have a bad start, because that'll really put you out of the race. You don't necessarily have to have a great start, but at least be in the middle of the pack.
So similar to the 100-yard dash, or I guess meter now. How's that for aging me? 100-meter dash versus the marathon. You want to be there at the start of the marathon, but if you're the first one across the line starting, it's probably not that big a deal.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. I'm just trying to bring them across.
Some jockeys are known for being exceptional starters. They know how to really get horses out of the gate. So if you're a trainer and you think your horse can win the race, but he needs a good start, you'll enlist the services of a top jockey that's famous for or has a reputation for getting out of the gate quick.
Is there jockey school?
There is, yeah. There's a lot of former jockeys who are like fairly well known will start a business in a jockey school, and then young men and women will go to this school and graduate. Then they have kind of a credential. They can take that with them and go to the tracks and say, look, I got this. I'd like to get started. I've been under the tutelage of so-and-so. So they can get jobs, and usually they'll start off just riding horses and working them out in the morning. And it might be several years before they get a chance to ride in a race, but it's a good way to get started.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Chuck Thomas.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the shopping show website.
Theshoppingshow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next shopping show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Chuck Thomas. So, Chuck, if somebody wants to get or explore, get into the career along any of the various career paths that there are into horse racing, I would think veterinary would be a big one, you know, whether you go to Davis or one of the other schools. But in some of the other areas, is this one of those sports where you just kind of hang out and get into the culture of it and start to develop, you know, finesse from there?
Well, there are many paths, you know, into horse racing. A really good one for young people that want to go to college and stuff is Arizona State University has a racing program, and you can go there and learn about racing management and track management and actually get a degree majoring in that. So that can be quite helpful when you get out of school, and you could, you know, apply for work at different tracks. It's a really successful program. So that's one way. And the other way is to just be kind of a vagabond and, you know, travel around the country and find a place where you can stick. And hopefully you have some talent. Usually you have to start off as a groom and mucking stalls, which means cleaning stalls and the really hard work. And then if you're lucky, maybe you can move up.
But the track management, that would be an intriguing that business model compared to other models.
It is. I actually went through something myself similar to that. I went to this school in Columbus, Ohio, and got a degree in...
OH? Apparently it was in Ohio State.
No. Columbus, Ohio, and I stayed in Columbus, Ohio for a while. And So that was a good that was help for me getting started in horse racing. But there's a couple of different programs like that, and it's a good way for young people with no connections who just want to get involved. That's an excellent way to start, either that or start cleaning stalls. So take your pick.
Yeah, the classroom or Ferndale Fairgrounds.
Right,
you figure it out, folks. Do you have? Is it one of those where you go right out of high school to get into the schools that you mentioned, either ASU or the one in Columbus? Or?
Well, it's upper division, so I imagine you could go to junior college wherever you want, and then transfer in and make that your degree.
Yeah, I guess there's all kinds of opportunities that are out there for kids as long as they're motivated.
A lot of the managers, of the track managers, went through that program. The people that are running the tracks now, a lot of them went through the Arizona program.
Thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
We've been Talking Shop with Chuck Thomas. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you then.